Well, earlier today, if you were up and awake and listening, you would have heard the sound of the royal carriage pulling away with Prince William and Kate Middleton, now the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, from the Westminster Abbey in London back to Buckingham Palace for the lunchtime reception. And at present, the couple is resting quite comfortable, thank you very much, at St. James Palace, where soon they will begin the evening reception with several hundred of their closest friends and family. So what say you? I know there are the naysayers and the grumblers, but here's what we also know. We know that some of you, a lot of you, got up this morning to watch this wedding, and I want to know why. Are you one of those secret royal revelers who is up at 4 a.m. to watch it? Were you back from your tea or Times Square just now? Did you host your own festivities? And was it worth all the hype? Give us a review, a royal rant, or even your regrets if you now have to slog through the rest of your day sleep-deprived as a result with no party at St. James Palace to look forward to. Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we have the perfect guest to help me take your calls on this royal wedding day with a unique both sides of the pond perspective. Joanna Coles is the editor-in-chief of the U.S. edition of Marie Claire magazine, which she has been running since 2006, but she began her career as a news reporter for the London Daily Telegraph before becoming a radio and TV broadcaster for the BBC and a writer for The Guardian. And here in New York, Joanna has held jobs as a features editor for New York Magazine, executive editor for More Magazine, and as New York's bureau chief for the Times of London. Joanna, thank you for being here with me this morning, bleary-eyed though you may be.
I am indeed bleary-eyed, Jamie, but I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I wanted to list all of that so people would understand why I invited you to be on. You are here not to discuss the wedding dress. You are here to enlighten me, Joanna, because people were and still are, a few hours later, very excited about this wedding. And I mean extraordinarily excited. There are parties in the streets of London, but even more surprising, here in the U.S., in our own listening area, folks poured into Times Square to celebrate. People actually woke up as early as 4 a.m. to watch this thing on the telly. In the interest of full disclosure, Joanna, I was not one of those. But I just don't get it, and that's why you're here. I don't want to talk about what the bride was wearing. I want to talk about why people on both sides of the pond are so excited over Will and Kate.
Well, I think it's partly that there's nothing in a way to hate about this. It's a couple who, goodness knows, I mean, what an extraordinary achievement for her. She has been like a collie farm dog nudging this poor guy towards the altar ever since she met him at college. She hasn't done anything between college and this wedding except, you know, finally drag him to the altar. So in a sense, and obviously I'm being slightly ironic here, one applauds her achievement in staying with it as Waity Katie and finally getting her goal. And obviously her parents dream for her. I mean, one of the stories out there at the moment is that her mother said to her, we're sending you to St. Andrews, it's where Prince William is going and you better come back with him. Well, indeed, Mummy, she did. I do think it's also against a backdrop of extraordinarily bad news in the world. I mean, you can see the Middle East erupting. It's now happening in Africa, too, as if it's ever stopped in Africa. You've had Japan. I mean, it's been one thing after another, not to say, of course, the backdrop of the economy. So in a sense, it's an uncomplicated story because it's a couple getting married and she looks very sweet and what's not to like about it as pure entertainment. But as a Brit watching it, it is slightly more complicated. I mean, on the one hand, one feels proud at the extraordinary public exhibition that the Brits are able to put on. But on the other, you realize that you're watching a monarchy in decline and the changing of a country.
So many points. You've raised the Cinderella story, the backdrop of bad news, so there's a good news story in the midst of it all. And then, of course, I want to talk with you a bit about the monarchy, but the phones, as you can imagine, Joanna, are lighting up. So let's take some of these calls. First to George in Manhattan. You're on with Joanna Coles.
George, hi, I'm George.
Did you get up, George, this morning at 4?
I got up at 4 this morning, and I listened to the BBC most of the night, in fact, and then watched the absolutely beautiful wedding on the television. I mean, exquisite. The whole pageantry was incredible. But what really impressed me was that here we have in England basically a Greek regent married to essentially a German queen, you know, the House of Hanover.
You're referring to Prince Philip and the Queen.
She's really a product of British people. And I'll tell you, the monarchy is not, and that's why the British people want to get rid of them, because they're simply not British.
And George, we're losing your line because it's cracking up a bit. But Joanna, you wanted to comment on George's point.
Well, I think George raises an interesting point. I mean, the monarchy does have to keep reinventing itself, and they can't all marry each other, which would be the other solution. And A, it's illegal, and B, it would not breed a healthy band of future monarchs. But I think that Britain probably is. I mean, I think his bigger point is Britain over the monarchy. I think they probably are. I mean, what's interesting about watching everybody in the park is that the reason they're in the park showing their support is everybody was given a day off work. I mean, it's a public holiday in Britain. It's a beautiful day. The parks are probably at their finest. There's no more glorious place to be than central London on a lovely sunny day when you don't have to go to work. So I think there's a sort of partial bribe there, but they do have to keep reaching out to other families. And, of course, much has been made of the fact that Kate Middleton is from a very ordinary family, and her now husband's mother, Diana, came from what Brits still refer to as the aristocracy. So it was still felt that somehow the monarchy was staying within safe boundaries. Kate Middleton is slightly out of that boundary, but she looks like she's going to be tethered fairly well.
And there is that Cinderella story, as you referred to it, and a little bit of the young women watching, and I suppose little girls who watch and say, well, then perhaps that can be me. But I guess that's a bit of an unrealistic lesson, isn't it, Joanna? I think the better lesson is probably that she would be the first queen with a college degree, and every girl should get one.
Well, she may well be the first one to have been bright enough to get a college degree. I mean, if you look at what happened to her now husband's mother, Princess Diana, very sad end. If you look at what happened to Fergie, who is married to Prince Andrew, the Queen's second son, I mean, you know, scrabbling around in America trying to sell contacts to her husband, and tragic. So, you know, the message from their story, I think, is if you do marry a prince, for goodness sake, stay married to him, because there is no life for you once the marriage has come to an end. Though I would like to make a small point, which is that Fergie, who I think, as everybody knows, was publicly humiliated by not being invited to the wedding, managed to get her own back by having her daughters Beatrice and Eugenie sit directly behind the Queen and Prince Philip. And of course, their hats were absolutely extraordinary. Beatrice looked as if she was being attacked by snakes from above. It wasn't a good look. Her mother's taste somehow managed to dominate and upstage the wedding.
They often say taste can be genetic. Let's jump to a few calls, a few more calls. We have Bretta from Ridgewood. Bretta, you're on with Joanna Coles.
I am, yes.
And I wanted to ask you why you watched, but I think you have a rather interesting reason.
Yes, I think I do. I wasn't following the story very much. I don't follow the popular magazines. And I was, happy that Prince William, as Princess Diana's son, was having this very happy day. And I felt, you know, moved by that. But it was really the article, the blog on the New York Times the day before yesterday, I think it was, between David Brooks and, remind me, the blog they share every Wednesday.
Gail Collins.
Yes, exactly. And I read that. I thought it was hilarious, and I got such a hoot. But it reminded me that this is going on, and that what the heck, you know, you might as well watch it. But then, of course, it was going to be so early, so I wasn't going to get up early.
But you did.
I did get up. I was amazed. I woke up at 6 a.m., which is quite remarkable for me. I went to bed very late. I woke up for some reason and suddenly realized, oh, it's on TV right now. And so I got the TV on just as Kate Middleton was being escorted at the door, really just before she started down the aisle. And I was thrilled at the look of it, the drama and the beauty of it. And I was moved because I remembered so well, of course, not only Diana's wedding, but her funeral. Mm. And that this was like this incredibly happy moment for everyone. And I thought, what the heck Lynn Collins? Who am I thinking of?
Gail Collins.
I thought Gail Collins can enjoy this. So can
well,
I. And then
you.
I realized I was very, very moved.
Bretta, thank
and,
you I mean, very much for your okay. call. Joanna, quick note, and then I'm going to take another call.
Well, of course, what was so fascinating about Diana's wedding was that we saw it from one point of view. She, of course, walked back down the aisle only scanning the audience for Camilla because she knew at that time
yes.
that they'd been going on, and her whole wedding was dominated by where's Camilla, where's Camilla, where's Camilla.
Which we only know, of course, after the fact, although I suppose some journalists in the know at the time, Joanna, perhaps knew it then, but now the world knows.
A lot of people know it now, but I think one can't be too seduced by this idea of perfect happiness at a wedding because there's often things going on under the surface
yes.
which only come to light after.
Even for the commoners. Claudia, let's take your call in Huntington, Long Island. You are on with Joanna Coles, and were you a royal wedding watcher? There is some degree of anonymity on the radio, so feel free to admit it. Are you with us, Claudia? I don't think we have.
No, I'm here.
Oh, go
I'm
right
sorry.
Ahead, Claudia. Did you wake up at the wee hours to watch this royal wedding?
I did. I woke up. Unfortunately, I woke up at 5, not 4, because one of my best friends is getting married today. So we were celebrating the rehearsal dinner last night. But I was up at 5 and watching everything, and I loved it. It was, you know, I grew up thinking I was going to marry Prince William. So.
Oh, dear. Well, I don't hope that you will, but there is another brother.
I'm getting married in October, so now I'm taken.
You're
so I can just celebrate, William, today.
Well, congratulations to your friend who will share her anniversary date. There's always now that the commoners are admitted to Buckingham Palace and Westminster Abbey, maybe there's a chance for your children.
There's always hope. It's true.
Now, Joanna Coles, I want to come back to you, and thank you very much, Claudia, for your call. My guest is Joanna Coles. She is the editor of Marie Claire here in the U.S., and I want to come back to you and talk with you a little bit about the wedding industry, because, of course, this wedding industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and I read a fascinating article in something called The Feminist Bride. It's an online blog. I love that title, The Feminist Bride, and she talked about the $70 to $85 billion industry, the dresses, the professional photographers, the outsized cakes, and she puts it all at the feet of Queen Victoria, that it all started with Queen Victoria. But the question I want to ask you, and it's sort of a question you would pose in Marie Claire, can there really be a feminist bride in the modern world? And it's been written about quite a bit that this bride, Kate, refused to say the word obey in her vows. What do you make of this kind of Victorian wedding in the year 2011?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I mean, as the editor of a magazine which tries to instill in women how incredibly important it is to be financially independent, it's hard to swallow the idea that literally Kate Middleton has spent the last 8 years pushing William to the altar. I mean, it is her only achievement as someone who's been to college. She's got a degree, but she hasn't done anything with it apart from a little work for a PR company, for a fashion house, and then for her parents. It's about business, isn't it? You catch someone when they want to show off to the world. They're very excited about getting married, about making a public declaration. It's a little bit about rite of passage. I mean, you go to bar mitzvahs these days, which are incredibly lavish events. I always felt, and you're talking to someone who got married in black pants, a gray sweater, when I was 8.5 months pregnant with my second child, and I went straight back to work afterwards. So in a sense, I'm the wrong person to ask, although I love going to weddings. But I think that, you know, couples increasingly get in debt over weddings, and mm-hmm. I think it's a tragedy because once the wedding is over, you have the rest of your life, and you suddenly realize that the wedding has gone. And one of the things that always strikes me, and actually I thought this was a good sign about Kate Middleton, was that Kate Middleton actually looked very much herself at the wedding. She had got her long hair, she does her own makeup, which she made a big thing about doing. You didn't feel like you were actually looking at someone else. And so often on a wedding day, you see this sort of extraordinarily enhanced bride, and you think she's just, you know, that is the best day of her life. Mm. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, yeah. And let's take a listen with that context to a little bit of Kate Middleton's vows as they were said at the Abbey.
Wilt thou love him, comfort him, honor and keep him in sickness and in health, and forsaking all other, keep thee only unto him, so long as ye both shall live.
I will.
And it's a shame that as we get older, we get a bit cynical. I wish I could listen to that without all of the context of the modern mature woman, but because it is a lovely fairy tale in a way. But as you say, Joanna, the modern woman knows so much more about the debt and the realities of being a woman, and one has to hope that Kate knows something of that, too, or at least that her mother has taught her that.
Well, one hopes her mother has taught her that, and at least her parents are still married, which William's obviously aren't/weren't. And one hopes also that William has been more diligent in protecting Kate against the real intrusions of the tabloid press and the tremendous public pressure that they are under in that position. And I think, you know, Diana had met Charles, I think, only 12 times before she married him. She was very ill-prepared. The palace wasn't as helpful as it should have been. And I think everybody has learned through the dreadful process of what actually happened to Diana that Catherine Middleton needs much more support. They're going to live in Anglesey, so which is a bit like being sort of banished to the furthest corner of Pennsylvania. But he's not directly heir to the throne either, which Charles was. So they won't be under quite the same pressure that Charles and Diana were. But, you know, fairy tales have grim endings too. People talk about fairy tales as if they're some sort of magical thing, and they are indeed magical, but there's often a wolf at the end ready to eat somebody.
That's right. In fact, if you go back to the original versions of most of the good fairy tales, the ending is rather bleak. Let's take a call along the lines of some of what we've been talking about, Joanna, the business side of things. Kevin in Brooklyn, you're on with Joanna Coles.
Yeah, hi. I just don't understand the fascination with royalty and the need for the monarchy in this day and age. I just really can see so many ways better to spend $34 million. And for them to actually label this wedding as demure is just ridiculous to me.
Well, you raise a very good point. I mean, the royal family would argue, and one of the biggest arguments indeed for keeping a monarchy in Britain now is that actually it brings in enough money in tourist dollars to pay for itself. So I think a lot of that $34 million would go on, obviously it would go on the armed services, keeping them secure, and it would go on the pageantry. But in turn, that brings people to central London. It brings Americans from out of town. They're all spending money in London's economy. So I think that actually, if you balance the books, the monarchy come out ahead in terms of attracting tourist dollars to the country, and indeed Windsor Castle and the Royal and Buckingham Palace is now open for a certain part of the year. So I think actually on a business basis, it does balance out.
And Joanna, the monarchy still matters very much for most English. 80% of those polled in the UK still believe that having a queen is better than having a president. Here in the U.S., I'm not quite so sure why so much interest in the monarchy. And Kevin, he was rather restrained in his call. Take a listen, though, to Melvin, who called into your old haunt, the BBC, with this comment.
Lovely royal wedding. Oh, my God! It makes me really sick.
There are
thousands like me, but we're not allowed to speak our mind about it.
Oh, please, it's a free country.
Not a free country, because this has been pushed upon us. We're in dire straits. We've got the country's on its knees, yet
Well, Joanna, I suppose even there at home in what I call the mother country, there are the royal bashers as well as those who love the monarchy, huh?
Well, there are. And actually, one does have to remember that Britain had a rather shaky election last May, when it was an uncertain outcome and the Conservatives, who'd got a small majority, were frantically looking around. They hadn't got an outright majority, but they were frantically looking around for a party to share power with, so that they could actually assume and start running the country. And there was a moment when actually a lot of people felt that having the Queen there, even though she actually does, I mean, in theory, she's head of state, in practice, that doesn't actually mean very much. But there was a moment when people looked to the Queen and saw her as someone that suggested great stability in a country that was actually slightly confused about what on earth to do politically. But I was very surprised to hear that it was as strong as 80%. I think it's utterly age-dependent. I think if you're over probably the age of 40, 45, you're in favor of the monarchy. But I think a lot of young people don't understand its relevance.
Mm. And that was a BBC poll, but your point is well taken. One would have to study closely the polling sample. And I guess, Joanna, in some sense, all of this is about looking forward to happier days, to the House of Spencer, a look ahead even perhaps to the London Olympics, and the need for optimism in, as you pointed out earlier, rather difficult times. Sort of the same way common families look at wedding traditions and weddings as a symbol of hope for their future, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you can be in dire economic circumstances and still be saving like mad to have a fantastic day. I mean, it's definitely a vote of confidence in the monarchy. I mean, I agree with your earlier caller that spending $34 million on a wedding and then saying, well, this is demure, is a sort of tasteless thing to say, because to most people that's ridiculous. But probably proportionately more was spent on Diana's wedding. I mean, they didn't do great flowers. There were trees in the abbey. I mean, I think they've cut back on many things. It's a much shorter journey back to Buckingham Palace from Westminster Abbey than Charles and Diana's journey from St. Paul's, which is much, much further away and would have been much, much more expensive proportionately. It was 30 years ago, you know, on a security basis to bring the couple back to Buckingham Palace. So it's a smaller event, but nevertheless, I do think it's a bit of a boost in the spirits for Britain, and everyone loves a day off.
Everyone loves a day off. I've always said, Joanna, we here should have election day off so people will turn out to the polls. After all, we did fight that revolution against the king all those years ago so people would vote. So maybe we'll take a cue from from England and give everyone a day off on election day. Thank you so much, Joanna, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Joanna Cole. She is the editor of the U.S. edition of Marie Claire magazine. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, we're going to take a sharp turn from the celebration of the royal wedding in the motherland to the utter devastation wrought by Mother Nature here at home.